All right, I think that's our cue to start, and I'm glad that all of you are here for this session on a sacred trust. Elders, protect your preacher. There's no doubt in my mind that if you were going to list the toughest jobs, toughest areas of work, being an elder in the church of the Lord has got to be on that list. It's difficult work. And I'm only speaking from one who has not been one, but being a preacher and interacting with elders and understanding the things that they face, I can't sometimes imagine what it would be like on the inside, being an elder myself. It's often a thankless job. It causes sleepless nights. The weight of responsibility on elders is as heavy as weight could be, because they watch in behalf of souls, Hebrews 13:17. But also in that discussion of tough jobs is the work of the gospel preacher. And that's why it's so important for the elder-preacher relationship to be as strong as it possibly can be. Because when that relationship is not strong, then the congregation where all of those people are is not going to be everything that it can and should be. It's not going to be everything God wants it to be if that relationship is not what it needs to be. For this session, I've been tasked with addressing the need for elders to protect their preachers. Now, there are things that I could say about the preacher's role in the congregation and things that preachers can and should do to help elders with their work. And I want to put that out there at the outset. I don't want anything to be construed as implying that the preacher plays no role in this. He does. And preachers need to do what they can to make the work of elders as easy as possible. And some preachers don't do that. But that's not my task for this session. I could do that, but my task is to address what elders can do to protect their preachers. Let's do that this way. In the first place, let's remind ourselves that elders are shepherds. Elders are shepherds. In J.J. Turner's book called Shepherds Wake Up, I found it interesting that he called attention to a lot of different leadership models that God could have chosen to use in Scripture to help illustrate what elders are expected to do, what they're supposed to be, the nature of their work. And he listed a number of them that would have been at the disposal, certainly of the Spirit in inspiring these individuals to write, but also in the sphere of the writer's experience, that were a part of the culture that could have been utilized to say, all right, when we talk about what elders are to do, here's a good analogy, here's a good example. But these were not chosen. He could have used the analogy or the comparison of the Roman military. Would have been culturally relevant. People would have understood that. But God chose not to use that analogy. Could have chosen the Greek debater. God didn't choose that comparison. Could have chosen the merchant or businessman model. It's not what God chose. The culture would have been familiar with the Roman Senate. He could have said, this is what I expect from elders. He didn't choose that. Could have chosen the Jewish Sanhedrin. Didn't choose that. Could have chosen the emperor. They would have known what that was, but that's not what he chose. God had at his disposal a lot of different leadership models and styles that he could have chosen to compare elders to, and he chose the shepherd. That's not by accident. In Acts chapter 20, verses 28 and 29, you've got the terminology there. Therefore, take heed to yourselves and to all the what? The flock, over which the Holy Spirit has made you overseers to what? Feed, King James. Shepherd, New King James. Shepherd the church of God, which he purchased with his own blood. There's the analogy. It's not the only one, but it's the predominant one. 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 2 and 3 uses the same terminology. Peter writes, "Shepherd the flock of God which is among you, serving as overseers, not by compulsion but willingly, not for dishonest gain but eagerly, nor as being lords over those entrusted to you, but being examples to," what's the word? Flock. Examples to the flock. So this sheep, flock, shepherding terminology is all over, not just the New Testament, but the Old Testament as well, with leadership comparisons. Well, that's what God chose to use as the predominant example of what He wants for elders to be. We'll not take a lot of time on this principle, but we need to have it there as a foundation. Elders, as shepherds, need to be men of compassion. Shepherds are compassionate individuals, feeding, guiding, attending to injuries among the sheep. Courage, protecting, we'll talk about that. Sacrifice, shepherds give up time, energy, blood sometimes. Elders are shepherds. Building on that is this second point. Preachers are sheep. Preachers are sheep. I think sometimes we forget that. And by we, I mean sometimes preachers and elders forget that principle that the preacher is among the sheep. Maybe because the preacher is often involved in meetings with the elders where the work of the congregation is discussed, and the preacher certainly is before the congregation in front of them in so many fashions and so many areas and at so many different times. Maybe all of that working together creates this mindset, though we wouldn't probably come out and verbally affirm that, but perhaps the way we interact with one another and the unspoken tendency is to forget that the preacher is among the sheep. Preachers and their families are not magically protected from problems that demand the attention of shepherds. We're not immune to that. We get depressed, just like other of the sheep do. Sometimes we get overworked. Sometimes we get underworked, and we need shepherds to help us with that too. Sometimes we get verbally attacked. We get tired. Our faith gets weak from time to time. Preachers are not immune to that. We get sick. We have financial difficulties at times. Our children aren't perfect. Our marriages sometimes go through rough waters. Preachers are not immune to those things. And we recognize that when we have those kinds of circumstances that are taking place among the membership generally, we recognize the need for elders to deal with those things and help and shepherd those sheep. But sometimes we think, perhaps unconsciously, subconsciously, that preachers don't have those problems. And if they do, they shouldn't. They either shouldn't have the problems or they shouldn't be preachers. Well, preachers are sheep. And sheep have problems from time to time. And sheep need protection. I want you to think for just a moment about Timothy. Sometimes I think I've got a lot in common with Timothy. And I mean that in the realm of his struggles. I find it interesting some of the things that were told about Timothy in the text. Consider these for a moment. Timothy was a preacher. In 1 Corinthians 16, verses 10 and 11, Paul is writing, of course, to the church at Corinth. Timothy is headed there. Paul goes out of his way at the end of this letter to say, 1 Corinthians 16, verses 10 and 11, "And if Timothy comes, see that he may work with you without fear." And there are many adversaries. End of verse 9. "See that he may work with you without fear, for he does the work of the Lord, as I also do. Therefore, let no one despise him, but send him on his journey in peace, that he may come to me, for I'm waiting for him with the brethren." I don't think that message was haphazard either. I don't think that was accidental that Paul wanted to instruct the church in Corinth to be sure that if Timothy comes through there, you make sure he's protected. Don't let anyone despise him. Send him on his way in peace. Put him at ease while he's there. Now, that one passage by itself may tell us some things, but then add the rest of the New Testament evidence that gives us some insight into Timothy's character. Paul writes directly to Timothy in 2 Timothy 1, verse 7, and says, "Now, Timothy, God has not given us a spirit of fear or timidity, but a spirit of power and of love and of a sound mind." Now, why would Paul write that to Timothy if that wasn't something Timothy struggled with? When you couple that especially with what was written to the Corinthians, where Paul said, "If Timothy comes, see that he may be with you without fear." Timothy, God hasn't given us a spirit of fear. There's twice now that that's come up with regard to Timothy. Paul saw the need for Timothy, that young preacher, to receive some level, some degree of protection. Remember Paul's advice to Timothy in 1 Timothy 5, verse 23? "Don't just drink water, Timothy. A little wine with that, for what purpose? For your stomach's sake." What happens in the stomachs of people who have a lot of stress and worry? Timothy evidently had some stomach issues. Paul said, "Timothy, you need to deal with that." But what caused it? Might it have been his tendency to be stressed out? When Paul needed someone to go to Crete to set in order the things that are lacking and to appoint elders in every city, Titus 1:5, who'd he send? Well, the answer's in the reference. He didn't send Timothy. There was a need on Crete for congregations to have elders put in place. He didn't send Timothy to do that. He sent Titus. But Timothy, however, was instructed by Paul, 1 Timothy 1, verse 3, "Remain in Ephesus." You stay in Ephesus. What did the church in Ephesus have that the churches of Crete did not? Elders. I don't think that's haphazard either. I think when you put all of this together, you get somewhat of a picture of a young preacher that needed to be protected. And Paul saw that in Timothy. And he gave instruction to the Corinthian congregation, gave instruction to Timothy. To be careful. Timothy, don't be afraid. Church at Corinth, make sure nobody despises him. And you make sure he goes on his way in peace, and that he's with you without fear. Timothy, I want you to remain in a congregation where there are already elders. I'll send Titus to Crete. You stay in Ephesus. Preachers need to be shepherded as much as any other member. And a part of that shepherding involves protection. Now, what do preachers need to be protected from? Let me give you just a very short list, but I think a very important list. Elders, protect your preacher from areas of work that others can and should do. Protect your preacher from areas of work that others can and should do. I think about Acts 6 in this regard. Church in Jerusalem, early verses of Acts 6, a problem comes up. It's a benevolence issue. Grecian widows feeling neglected in the daily disbursement. And so the problem arose and it was causing division. How were they going to handle it? Well, the apostles said, you know what? We're not going to directly handle that. We want you to select out from among yourselves 7 men that meet these qualifications and then let them handle that. And the reason that's given in Acts 6 has to do with the apostles' specific role in the ministry of the Word. Acts 6, verse 4. We will give ourselves continually to prayer and to the ministry of the Word. The apostles looked at that situation and they said, you know what? Did the apostles have the ability to handle that matter? Sure, they could have handled that. But they said, you know what? There's a hierarchy here of things that need to be done, and we need to focus our attention devoting to prayer and to the ministry of the Word. And that's where we're going to focus. But you select these other men that can handle this. And then they let them handle it. The apostles had particular abilities and responsibilities to which they needed to devote their full attention. Now, obviously, today's preacher and first century apostles have their differences, but they're very similar in their work. If a preacher is going to do the work of an evangelist, 2 Timothy 4:5, and fulfill his ministry, same verse, in that realm, then he can't be hampered by responsibilities that take him away from doing that. And it's easy sometimes for a lot of these other extracurricular needs that are legitimate needs in the local congregation, but a lot of that can sometimes be dumped on the preacher because perhaps he's at the building every day. Or for whatever other reason, the preacher gets that responsibility placed upon him that takes him away from focusing his attention on praying and ministering the Word. Elders need to protect their preachers from that. I would suggest that benevolence issues would fall into that category, much like they did in Acts 6. It's not a sin for preachers to help out in that area. That's not what I'm saying. But if there's someone else that can do that job, then let them do that. Let them have an opportunity to serve too. And let the preacher focus on the ministry of the Word. What about things like the church house yard? Buying, you know, negotiating the lease on the copy machine? IT maintenance? That's information technology, Don. Computers. Building upkeep, you know, things. Are those important things? Sure they are. They serve a vital need. But if the preacher gets saddled with a lot of that stuff that other people could be doing, whatever time he spends doing those kinds of things, that is time that he is not spending devoting himself to prayer and the ministry of the Word. Now, let me add this. It has nothing to do with preachers being, quote unquote, too good for that kind of work. It doesn't have anything to do with that. It's just that every work of that type that preachers have to do takes them away from study and prayer and teaching, and in the process lessens the quality of that work, and the congregation suffers as a result of that. Preachers do not have the miraculous gift of inspiration. You know, when Jesus gave His apostles instruction about their future and the things that they would teach and they would stand before others and proclaim and all of that, and He told them specifically, don't worry about what you're going to say on those occasions, because it will be given to you at that moment what you're going to say. We don't have that today. Preachers must have time to read, to think, to meditate, to compose, to write, to rewrite, to think. Did I mention think? We have to have time to do that. I did this little activity once. We have one of the members at Brown Trail is a court reporter. And I had her, because I knew it wouldn't take her long, I had her take an audio of one of my sermons on a Sunday and just transcribe it, which she did. And then I did a word count. She actually did several of my sermons that way, and I took an average. And my average sermon or Bible class, which, you know, were about the same length of time, came out to about 5,000 words. All right, so each sermon and Bible class, roughly 5,000 words. Then, the average number of sermons and classes that I teach per year, two sermons on Sunday, a Bible class on Sunday, a Bible class on Wednesday night, on average, right? Factoring in the fact that you got some vacation time and you're not there for this and that. Put all that together, in 1 year's time, about 180 sermons and classes. So the number of words preached and taught in sermons and class settings in 1 year's time is about 900,000 words. The average number of words in every 400-page novel is about 100,000. So if you've got a preacher who teaches two classes a week and preaches two sermons a week, he is responsible for preaching and teaching enough material every year to fill 9 400-page novels. You want to know what your preacher's doing throughout the week? That's it. People want to talk about, well, preachers only work once a week or one day a week and all of that. Not if he's doing his job right. Not if he's putting in the study he needs to put in to be able to put together classes and sermons that are doing some good. Do you want to write 9 400-page novels within a year's time? You know, there are pulpits that need preachers. You want in? When I mentioned those numbers to the congregation at home, I said, as kindly as I knew how, I said, you know why sometimes, if you drop by the building, sometimes my door is closed? It's not that way every time. It's not that way all the time. But sometimes my door's closed and there's a note that says, please do not disturb. You know why? Because I've got to get that material done. You know, sometimes when you call up to the office and my sweet wife answers the phone and you ask to talk to me and she says, you know what, can he call you back later if this is not an emergency? That's why. Because sometimes I simply have to close the door and turn the phone off in order to get my studying done. If elders do not protect their preachers from all of the extracurricular work that sometimes gets very easily and without malice falling into their lap, if elders don't protect preachers from that, the congregation ultimately suffers because the preacher is not able to put in the time that's necessary to do the work to the best of his ability. And elders can be great helpers in protecting their preacher from being given work that others can and should do. And by spreading the work around like that, it offers opportunity for other people to serve in other capacities. All right, protect your preacher from work that others can and should do. Number two, goes somewhat hand in hand with that first point. Protect your preachers from overload. From overload. You know, the more works and programs that a congregation is involved in, the greater chance there is for preachers to become overloaded. If, and this is the key, if the preacher is expected to take an active role or a leadership role in each of those programs and each of those works. Sometimes this can be too much. Think about this for a moment. First of all, Sundays are already full for the preacher, right? He's got a full plate on Sunday. But if you've got Monday night visitation, Tuesday night elders meeting, Wednesday night Bible study, Thursday night youth devo, Friday night education committee meeting, Saturday's a work day at the building, when does he get to be a father to his children? When does he get to take his kids to the ball game? Right? That has nothing to do with any deficiency in any of those works. But if the preacher is expected to be an active participant or even a leader in each of those areas of work, and you've got something scheduled every night of the week and Saturdays too, when does he get to build work on his marriage? You know, we expect the preacher to do all of those things and yet have a strong marriage and good kids. And a strong marriage and good kids takes time from a father. And sometimes, as well-meaning as we are, sometimes congregations can be doing so many things and expecting the preacher to be actively involved in all of those things, and then the preacher has problems with his kids, and they get called in and said, well, what's the problem? What's up with your kids? Well, maybe you've put so many responsibilities on me that I haven't had time to be the parent that God wants me to be. Now, there may be other reasons too, but that's at least one to consider. Protect your preacher from overload. And in this respect too, sometimes we preachers will take more on ourselves voluntarily because we struggle with the ability to say no. That was one of my problems that resulted in what I talked about earlier today. I didn't have the ability to say no. Well, I had the ability, I just wasn't doing it. Here's a good work. Oh boy, I really need to be involved in that. Okay, I'll do it. Wow, this is a good work too. Okay, I'll do that. And I had created a scenario where I had too much to do. Elders, protect your preacher. You may have to bring your preacher in and say, you know what? We're concerned that you've taken too much on yourself. Why don't we talk about reducing your load and gently and compassionately help him to make sure he's focusing on the things that he needs to be focusing on. Protect your preacher from overload. What time do we stop this? 3:15. Okay. Number three. Elders, protect your preacher from shepherding expectations. Protect your preacher from shepherding expectations. Preachers are not shepherds, usually. I mean, there are some circumstances where a man who's filling the pulpit is also one of the elders. I understand that. But in most cases, that's not true. Preachers are not the shepherds of the congregation and should not be expected to be so. if Brother Cantankerous is being himself, then the elders need to step in and do something about that. A divisive man, after the first and second admonition, refuse. Paul told Titus, Titus chapter 3. So if Brother Cantankerous is living up to his name, then shepherds need to step in and protect their preacher from Brother Cantankerous if he's causing problems for him. If Sister High Maintenance is being herself, well, then that's a shepherding issue. And the shepherds need to step in and take care of that matter and help Sister High Maintenance to become less so, perhaps. And may I suggest this? May I suggest that elders handle all responses to the invitation? Can you think of a better opportunity for shepherds to shepherd hurting souls than when one walks the aisle at the invitation saying, "I need shepherding"? But what do we normally do? Preacher handles that, doesn't he? I understand that, and I appreciate that, and I'm grateful for that. But that's not everywhere, Brother Cliff. Yeah. Most of the time, the preachers handle that. The preacher stands before the congregation with the invitation song. Somebody comes down, the preacher handles it. The preacher, you know, talks with them on the front row. If they fill out a card, the preacher offers them some words of encouragement or whatever. He gets up, he reads the card to the congregation. A lot of times the preacher words the prayer, the preacher. And we wonder how people get the idea and the concept that the preacher's a pastor when we do stuff like that. When one of the members of the congregation comes before the church and says, "I've got a problem. I need the prayers of the church. I need help." What are they asking for? They're asking for shepherding. And who are the shepherds? It's not me. It's not the preacher. Protect your preacher from shepherding expectations. It would help us greatly to steer even our own brethren's concept of the role of the preacher, to steer it in a better direction, and to steer their concept of the elders in a better direction if elders handled things like that and not put the preacher in the position of doing it, because it feeds that false concept. I'm not saying it's sinful for the preacher to do that. I'm just saying it's not the best way. It's not helping us when we let the preacher handle things that the elders ought to be handling. Number next. What is that, four? Last. This is number last. Elders, protect your preachers from sensitive information. Protect your preachers from sensitive information. It is true that elders and preachers should work together for the good of the church. There is a teamwork, a team concept that has to be there. And while all of that's true, there are some things that the preacher just does not need to know. There is sensitive information, shepherding information, that the elders will know about as they go about their work that really the preacher doesn't need to know about. Sometimes elders are handling those kinds of sensitive situations that involve certain members of the congregation, and it's just wise that the preacher not be made aware of that information. It protects him a lot of times from unwise, unnecessary, and ill-informed personal attacks by some members. If he can just simply say, when somebody comes and says, "Well, what's going on about this?" And you can honestly say, "You know what? I don't know. You'll have to talk to the elders about that." That helps protect the preacher. Sometimes he just needs to be kept out of the loop. And wisdom will have to dictate under what circumstances that's the case. And elders and preacher can work that out themselves. But there just simply is, from time to time, sensitive information that needs to be kept from preachers. So basically, in a nutshell, what I'm saying to you as elders is, remember that the preacher is among the sheep, and he needs the protection and the shepherding that everybody else in that congregation needs. Don't overlook the preacher as you try to fulfill your responsibility as an elder. My elders have my admiration. They have my love. They have my prayers. And part of the reason is because I also know they have my back. Have your preacher's back. Thank you.